There's where we begin with, yes, our own Dan Zangrilli, who pinch hit for Joe Block all weekend. Dan, a bad luck charm, it would appear, for the Pirates, as he called three straight losses. The Pirates get spanked by one of the few teams in baseball worse than them record-wise. The White Sox come in here and by a count of 27-7 sweep the Pirates and send a lot of fans home, because it was a reasonably well-attended series, especially Saturday. Send them home unhappy. It's where we begin on the PM team. Happy Monday to you. 412-928-9370. That's the fan text line. It's brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. It's easy in this job to be something of a prisoner of the moment, to opine about something, to give out a take, and then to be reminded, maybe by a co-host, which I don't have today, Pony taking the last day of his long weekend, well-deserved long weekend. It's easy to say something, be a prisoner of the moment, be reminded by perhaps a co-host or even a producer who's got their eye on the ball, that, oh, hey, remember this happened too. It's always been better. It's always been worse. The moment that you're in is never the principal bad or good moment, usually. That's kind of a way people like to look at things like sports. No matter how bad it seems, it's always been worse. No matter how good it is, it's always been better. And yet, even knowing or even subscribing to that theory and having done this long enough to have seen some really bad baseball, some really frustrating football, some really high highs in hockey in the time that this station has been on the air, that right there, that final call from Dan of that final game, and we were going to play all three final calls, but my computer continues to hate my guts for some reason. That final call felt like the final nail of one of the ugliest coffins the Pirates have ever built for themselves. That felt like the actual nadir of not the Ben Cherington tenure so much, although I think that qualifies too. Bob Nutting and his family, Bob Nutting himself specifically, has been the principal owner of the Pirates since sometime back in about 2007, was when he really stepped to the fore. It's been almost 20 years of principal ownership for Bob Nutting. That actually felt this weekend, and feel free to tell me that I am in fact being a prisoner of a bad moment here, and that it's actually been worse than this. This weekend, if you're going to shrink it down to a microcosm of a couple of games, this weekend, if you're not going to take the bird's eye view and look at an entire season in the rearview mirror, if you're just going to say, boots on the ground, this is as bad as it has ever felt, I don't think you can come up with something worse than what the Pirates just put forth coming out of the All-Star break. That is how bad it was at PNC Park. Why can I say that with such conviction? I was there. I can say it because I was there. I was there on Saturday. Yinzer Palooza. You've got Picklesburg happening. Mac Miller bobbleheads. You have people lined up reportedly at 8 a.m. for a Mac Miller bobblehead. A line that stretched quickly around the park to get a Mac Miller bobblehead. You've got Pittsburgh through and through, as much Pittsburgh as you can stuff into one ball game, as many promotions as you can come up with, in front of a pretty much packed house. And the Pirates didn't get blown out like in the first game of the series. Didn't just get regular old beat like they did in the second game of the series. The Pirates actually did something almost worse, which was offer their fans brief hope by jumping out to a lead, only to have a Looney Tunes conga line of White Sox come in the sixth inning, and blow what looked like a potential win into a very bad loss. A blowout loss, a six-run loss, a rout. Taken completely as a group of three, considering the relative weakness of the opponent, I will point out to you that even after having swept the Pirates, the White Sox still have a worse record than the Bucks. Take all of that stuff into account. This is as bad as it's been. Take into account the fact that this was supposed to be a good Pirates team, or at least a competitive Pirates team. And this feels as bad as it has ever felt around this team, at least since Bob Nutting took over. 20 years in the wilderness sucked bad. 20 years in the wilderness created apathy. 20 years in the wilderness featured trades that made you want to pull your hair out, even if you don't have hair like me. Featured ballyhooed prospects that could allegedly walk on water that couldn't even hit ground balls through the shortstop third base hole. 20 years produced, I don't know, just years where it felt like nothing happened and you just move on to the next and nothing was still happening. I don't know if it produced anything quite like this, though. I don't know if 20 years of Pirates losing prior to them getting good for 3 years, really good for 3 years, ever felt quite the way this does. And the reason is, as I've said many times, the Pirates got a blessing in last year's draft, and it has turned into a curse. Well, 2 years ago, whatever you want to look at. They got a blessing in the Paul Skeens draft. It very quickly turned into a curse. They drafted what looks like it's going to be a guy who looks like he's going to go down as conservatively one of the best pitchers of his era. Less conservatively, like one of the best pitchers of all time. He has so far lived fully up to his billing. The team has gotten worse. A team that won 76 games when he was a rookie last year is on pace to win a lot less than that this year. The Pittsburgh Pirates are 39-61. They've played 100 games. They haven't even won 40% of them. To get to 76 wins, they would have to win 37 of their last 62. Would you like to do quick math, Donnie? That's 37-25 just to get to last year's record. They are 24 games under 500 when they are not at PNC Park. They are getting worse rapidly at PNC Park. They won 6 in a row. Everyone, whoa, some signs of friskiness? They're 1-9 in their last 10. They've won one game since that 6-game winning streak. One. And it felt like with a packed house on Saturday, with decent crowds, of course, pretty good crowds Friday and Sunday, the just total no-show by this baseball team felt worse than it's ever felt. What's going on here? When's it ever going to stop? Is there any light at the end of the tunnel that isn't just a freight train barreling down to hit you again? I was at the game Saturday, like I said. I literally cannot when you take all the variables into account of a bigger bummer of a 3-game span than that one. And that, by the way, includes the fact that you knew going in they weren't a contender. I mean, they started the series 39-58, but you come out of the All-Star break, and I think like most people, I don't know about Donnie, we'll get his take on this in a second. Like most people, though, I say, all right, you've had the All-Star break, you're technically more than halfway through the season, but everyone breaks a baseball season down thusly, before the All-Star break and after. You're going to have a trade deadline. Maybe you're going to see some signs of life from this team. Maybe you'll even see some from younger guys from this team. You're going to see players get called up, presumably. You saw none of it. The whole Don Kelly experience was supposed to be a good one in part because they were playing a lot harder for him. I did not see a team that I thought was playing particularly hard. They got a couple of runs, they got up in the game on Saturday, and then it just went to crap. You knew they were going to be bad in 2010. You knew at the end of the Littlefield tenure that Neil Huntington had a big lift ahead of him. You knew John Russell was uninspiring. You knew Jim Tracy before him was annoying. You knew Lloyd McClendon was trying to fight for the team when there was nothing really on the field worth fighting for. They were supposed to be competitive this year. They have the best pitcher in baseball. Every 5 days, they get to trot out a guy who's going to probably give them 6 or 7 innings of either 0 or 1-run ball. They have another pitcher who's actually been pretty good by and large all year in Mitch Keller. They have done precious little to nothing with it. They have put the gear shift in reverse and slammed the gas pedal as hard as possible. So I'm wondering, anybody else that went, It was a lively atmosphere for most of the weekend, especially on Saturday night. There were fireworks Friday. Does it feel, I guess I'd go Peter Frampton here, Don. Do you feel like I do? Was that as low a point as you can remember since Bob Nutting has taken over as owner? That goes back to 2007. Is this as bad as it has ever been? The Pirates have a much better chance of losing 100 games this year than they do of matching last year's win total of 76. 412-928-9370. What are your thoughts here, Don? I'll mention, by the way, after Donnie gets done here. Actually, I'll say it right now. It's a good primer for you. If you were at the ballpark, I think it was yesterday, you did witness history. The Pirates, for the first time since 1903, became a losing franchise all in. They are now 10,879 and 10,880, and Cook has been there to cover all 21,000-plus games.
And he should be thrilled he's not there now, Mulsey, because I do think it's the lowest time in the Bob Nutting era. Our buddy Adam Gretz, a Greensburg guy, listens to the show. He does
high-quality
work.
He's very good at his job.
On his own
does.
End.
Yep.
He said something yesterday on social media that I agreed with. We went through as fans, and I wasn't even around for the first couple of years, but I was around for about 17 of the 20 losing seasons until the team got back to the playoffs in 2013. But this does feel to me like it's so much worse. It feels like it's so much more difficult to watch this team play than it was to watch them play in my childhood. Was that because I was a little kid? Maybe, but it feels difficult to watch night after night, really, unless it's a Paul Skeens outing, to watch the Pirates play, because even in years where they were losing in the mid-90s pretty consistently, it felt like the product was mostly entertaining. And to reference that 2010 team,
you could point to a Brian Giles type of guy in the late 90s. You could point to some, like, there are fun memories from
Jason
some of those.
Jason Bay, Jack Wilson, Freddie Sanchez.
The Mikoviak game. There were, like, weird, random, fun things that happened in the midst of bad seasons. There were like, at least cult hero type of guys.
I saw Pony put out, like, the comparison of the lineups, and you referenced the 2010 team that lost, 105 games.
Yep.
The thing about that team, you could at least stomach losing with young guys, truly young guys in that lineup.
Like,
you
in had multiple places.
Yes. You had Kutch, you had Neil Walker, you had Pedro, you had Jose Tabata that was like 21 years old. Garrett Jones was a little bit older, but he was a late bloomer. But you were losing with young guys that you could at least circle and think, you know, there's something here. This team could build something here out of what they have with these 3, 4, 5 players. You don't have that with this team. You can maybe circle Cruz, but everybody gets so pissed off watching him play too. You can maybe circle him, and that's about it in their current 1 through 9, daily 1 through 9. There's like nothing to even pinpoint from the offensive side of the baseball to say this team can build a winner out of what they already have.
412-928-9370. I was there Saturday, Mac Miller bobblehead night. That part was a success. Game itself, not so much, as the White Sox broke it open en route to a sweep of the Pirates. I will remind you, the White Sox are even worse, at least in terms of record. They didn't look like it for 3 games on the North Shore. Does this feel like the true low point since Bob Nutting took over as the owner? It does to me. They were supposed to be competitive. They have the best pitcher in baseball, and this is the product right now that's out there.
0-1. Swung on, and a fly ball out to center, deep, pushing Cruz back to the track. Over his head, he can't get it. One run is in. The runners had to freeze momentarily. Here comes the second run. Relay throw to the plate. It's up the line. It's a 2-run double over the head of O'Neill Cruz, and Mike Tauchman has driven in 3 today. A homer and this 2-run double to straightaway center field, making it 7-1 White Sox in the 5th inning.
That was the 5th inning. I'm sorry. I got my innings crossed up. I'll be honest. I am a father of 2. My wife and I were at the game with my father-in-law and with a bunch of the in-laws' relatives, cousins, that they don't necessarily see often. And so there are a lot of kids there, and Alex and I made the executive parenting decision that after our kids had been good for four innings sitting in the seats, we would go let them play in the playground area, Don, out in right field. And so it was with some kind of amusement's not the right word, but you just kind of, you see a scene unfolding from afar. First, there was the exodus of people after the pierogi race, which I was just, I know it happens every game to some extent, but this one just kind of got me because there's probably more casuals there because it's Yinzerpalooza, it's the Mac Miller bobbleheads. An exodus of like a noticeable number of people after the pierogi race. And then just being out in right field while my kids are having the time of their lives and the game is going completely to crap in the stadium itself was just a surreal thing. But that was our guy Dan Zangrilli, who I thought did very solid work in play-by-play. He's going to join us in about 15 minutes, just a little less than, to talk about that. But also, I mean, he called three of the most desultory performances I've ever seen. Complete no-show on Friday for fireworks. I would say a partial no-show from about the fifth inning on Saturday. And then, did they ever get off the bus, Don? How did they score two runs yesterday? I don't really know. Felt like I just wasn't even watching a baseball team. And so, it's that reason that I start the show by saying, just does this feel like the low point, and where do you think it goes from here with the Pirates? 412-928-9370. The three highest attended home games of the year, okay? So, if you are a businessman who owns this team, you would want, when you're packing them in, for whatever reason, you want to create repeat customers, do you not? When you're packing them in to the highest degree, even if it's out-of-town fans, for a Yankees or a Mets or a Cubs, you want the people that are there to cheer on the Pirates to see a good team, right? To see a team that plays well. Three highest attended home games of the year for the Pirates, 0-3, outscored 22-8. Saturday's game being, I think, the second highest attended game of the year. 0-3, 22-8. Wouldn't call it great. Michael is on 93.7 The Fan. Hello, Michael.
Hey, how you doing today, guys?
Good.
Jeez. What do you really say about these clowns? Do you think Bob Nutting really knows how pathetic and inept his team looks to the rest of the major league in the world?
I'm glad you started that off. I'm glad you brought that up to start with, because I'm going to be digging in a little bit more to that. I mean, he has said many times, Michael, that he feels an urgency to win. I've talked to people who work for the team who say, no, he does want to win. He's a competitive guy. But I do wonder if he's as plugged in as I am led to believe, more so than I thought he was. He cannot possibly watch three games like that and not be shaking with anger at how frustratingly bad this team is and how listless they look.
I cannot concur even 1,000%, Malzy. Malzy, I was lucky enough, and I'm old enough to remember when the Pirates won the World Series in 79. I was 9 years old. I'm 57 now. Okay, little did I ever
think. Did Heinz send you a case of products for your last birthday? They used to do that. You could write in and they would do that back in the day, apparently. They'd send you 57 varieties, man. You could get some like chili sauce, some mustard, ketchup to beat the band.
Back in the days, I remember all like this, of course. I remember the chili goals. Remember with the Penguins back in the days. I don't know if you remember that.
57 varieties used to send people cases of their products on their 57th birthday. I have heard that that was a thing. I think if you're born on May 7th, they should send you that kind of stuff. But I digress, Michael.
I agree. But this is the thing. There's nothing's working. I mean, at the trade deadline, I mean, this team has given up. And it's sad year after year after year that we have to look forward to Steelers training camp because the Pirates are usually out of it by July.
It's not even that, like, here's the worst part. Thanks for the call. It's not even, as I said earlier, like we went into this series thinking, oh, yeah, okay, here comes a big turnaround. They were already 20 games under or 19 games under. It's just, where was the, there was like no accountability. And you know what? That gets into Don Kelly. I've heard so much that Don Kelly is such a vast improvement over Derek Shelton. I mean, technically he has been. He's 8 games under 500 through 62 games managed. Shelton was what, 12-26. The run differential for Don Kelly is better, but it's still negative. And the team looks like they are really and rapidly heading in the wrong direction. And this was supposed to be a competitive bunch. How bad do you have to be Ben Cherington? And there's obvious frustration with the owner from a lot of people. But I hear just as many complaints about the GM that happen in a total vacuum when people talk to me about the Pirates. Think about how bad you have to have done at building up this team and trying to put a workable roster on the field for that to be the case. Anthony in Oakland rejoins the show. It's been a while. Hello.
Well, I've been incognito. Listen, you know what? Thank God I have a reservoir to tap into of great, seeing great Pirate teams and winning teams ever since 1960. I saw that team. This is a nightmarish. And, you know, I'm sitting at night, and I do, when I go to bed and pray, I pray for commissioner intervention like they did for the fans of Cincinnati and Oakland to take this franchise away from this man. He is incompetent. When you've only made the playoffs, I'm going back just to 1985 when the team was sold, 6 times in 4 years, that's Titanic type stuff. Why does the commissioner, and I know why the owners of Major League Baseball wanted to keep happening, because they're going to take all of our players.
Well, I'll be honest with you. The commissioner, I think, probably has less of a problem with how the Pirates are run and how in their quote unquote plight, Anthony. The commissioner probably has less of an issue with all that than some of the big market owners do. In fact, I'd almost bet you money that the big market owners are more upset because they say, okay, we pay out in revenue sharing X, Y, and Z. Shouldn't that go back more into trying to build? And this isn't just at the Pirates. I would imagine they'd say it about the Rays, although they are good this year, the Athletics for a long time. Like, you could probably name 7 or 8 teams and they'd say, well, wait a minute. If we're paying all this revenue sharing money, why aren't those teams better? Like, shouldn't we want healthy, like somewhat healthy balance for all? Gary in Gibsonia before we take a break. Hey, Gary.
How you doing, Malzy? Hey, listen, I was at the game. I'm a 69-year-old passionate baseball supporter of the Pirates, and I took my son-in-law. Unfortunately, my grandson got sick, and the other kids' grandchildren were at home. I'm going to say something. I've been to many, many games. That was the most deflating in all the years. And I played college ball, too. And I can honestly say that was the most deflating Saturday night I've ever seen. They had a crowd that was so fired up. It was reminiscent of the 2019. And I understand it may have been riled up because of the, them getting the bobblehead.
You still had 35,000 plus in there who at first saw some good baseball through 4 innings where you have a lead.
Well, here's the thing. All you had to do is look at Bart's face, striking out, and you could just tell these guys.
Oh, the body language is horrible, Gary. That's like I don't know if I made it. I didn't make it clear enough. I didn't make it clear at the start of the show. Like specifically, the way they went down with a whimper in this series, and who the opponent was, is what prompted me to start this. I've seen this team lose a lot of baseball games. I've not seen something that the confluence of circumstances made it look this bad. You have Paul Skeens. I know he didn't pitch in the series. He's pitching tonight. Here's where the expectation level was. Here's what people thought this would be. And here is what they are so far getting. That's what made that so staggering, I guess is the right word, to witness. That's what made it so deflating. Dan Zangrilli is going to give us his perspective. He was in the broadcast booth. He was doing play-by-play, wasn't doing pre and post, wasn't fielding calls from Chuck in Uniontown and others furious with the team, Greg in Youngstown. We'll get Dan's perspective from the booth, but also, I mean, the man does run the North Shore Tavern leadoff show. He does host pre and post here typically on The Fan. We'll get his bird's eye view of what he saw, both as a play-by-play man, but also as a guy whose job it is to give some opinions about this team. That's coming up next. Continue to talk Pirates after just, let's be honest, let's call it what it was. I think the low point on the field that I've seen in the almost 20 years Bob Nutting has owned this team, what happened this weekend.
Swung on, a line drive. That's going to fall down. Base hit right center field. Reynolds will score from second. 1-0 Pirates. Ball goes all the way to the wall. Gonzalez will be waved. He'll score. Pirates 2, White Sox 0 in the fourth inning as Key Brian Hayes delivers a 2-run double to the opposite field.
That was our very own Dan Zangrilli moonlighting for 3 games in place of a vacationing Joe Block, who must have known it was the good time to get out of town and head to Belize. Instead of call these 3 games this weekend where the Pirates turned in three stinkers consecutively against the lowly Chicago White Sox. I think, by the way, if you have a better record than a team that came in and just swept you even after the sweep, but they swept you, I feel like I put you below them. Like, if I were making an MLB power rankings for this week, Pirates have now dropped below the White Sox despite being four games better in terms of record. Reminder, too, listen to the PM Team on Demand. That's us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Dan Zangrilli himself is on the fan hotline right now, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Dan, I am often very sarcastic. You and I and Pony often trade very sarcastic barbs, but I will tell you this sincerely. I caught a good chunk of Friday's game while I was doing a couple errands after work in that evening, and I thought you sounded very good, so my hat's off to you. You stepped into what I know is a pressure-packed but fun situation, and I thought you did very well with it.
Well, thanks, man. Appreciate the kind words. Refined ear. Big ears. Big head.
My ears, I think, are pretty normal-sized. So I think. The head, the cranium right now, I got a hat that, like, I think I overestimated the size of the hat even because my head doesn't even fill this thing that I'm wearing.
Well, the big brain and the big head and the ears that go along with it. What I'm trying to say is it's a backhanded compliment that you have an acumen and a refined palate, right?
Oh,
refined
yes.
ears. So I take your praise very highly. I do. I'm serious about that. No. For real,
you
man,
had to be bummed, though.
Dream come true.
It had to be fun and a dream come true, but then they can't even give you like a competitive game into the ninth inning. Each game was pretty much over by the seventh inning stretch, man.
I couldn't even get a baseball to leave the yard either. Right. So yeah, kudos to Joe for like playing those cards perfectly. It was wonderful to do. I hope I have the opportunity to do it again. I mean, I will this year. There's a Cubs series. We'll let that out of the bag.
Oh, nice.
But you know, just fill in guy. Just kind of do whatever they tell me to do, crumbs wherever they land.
You'd knocked off, like, I'm not saying rust, you obviously do high school football, you're doing play-by-play still, but like the baseball rust or whatever, and feel like, okay, I've settled in and I feel good right now?
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing it and you're on the air, as we are, I don't want to say it's not that hard, it's a very complicated thing to do, but I felt okay with how it went. I was concerned about it, but I felt it had been about two or three years since I'd done actual baseball play-by-play live, and I felt okay, and hopefully it came across that way, and I just wanted to give the score and not screw it up and keep the seat warm and, you know, give people what they needed to know, and that's just the basics, the fundamentals. And, of course, I had literally, I would say, for my money, and you probably agree with this, maybe the best analyst in all of sports in Bob Walk. So that's a nice little safety net when you look to your left and somebody that you know and trust and like, because, you know, we work together, obviously, doing stuff on the postgame shows. That made things much, much easier. And, you know, you hear his name a lot on the air, like Doran Check. He's elite at what he does, engineer, producer. So I had the pillow fluffed, mints on it, and
wow,
everything that I could have needed. So the infrastructure there was set up for success.
What a retroactive scene set by you about your own job play-by-play manning it. That was impressive. The mints on the pillow, the pillow fluffed. When you're up there, though, could you sense, because I'll now meld you doing play-by-play with the actual story of the weekend, which is just, oh my God, those three games. Mm-hmm. You're so locked in, I'm sure, to calling the action, to keeping on task, though. Are you, like, aware of just the mood and the anti-buzz in that ballpark that was forming and building, especially by, like, Saturday night? I know that wasn't the worst of the three games, but it felt like it a little bit with that Big Mac Miller crowd and them jumping out to a lead only to give it all the way back.
Yeah, and some unsuspecting characters, like with Ferguson and Mattson,
yep,
guys that are,
yep,
pretty reliable. Yeah, you sort of felt it then in that, what was it, a sixth-run, sixth inning. And, sure, you're locked into every pitch, and as a play-by-play guy, even more so than pre and post, I mean, you literally keep your two fingers on the pulse for every minute of the game. I mean, outside of the manager, the play-by-play guy might be the most locked-in person in the ballpark. I felt it in the mood and the swings, and yeah, you're thinking of all of those things, considering how many games they had lost on the road trip coming in, and you could feel it. You know, the crowd, you're dialed into all of that. And it was, from that standpoint, really disappointing and sad and a bummer. And
does it feel like the low point of the time since Nutting's been the owner? Like, I'm talking the combination of what you expected coming in, they have Skeens, and just who the opponent was. It felt like a perfect storm. Like, man, you've watched bad baseball. I've watched bad baseball here. We've watched some good baseball too, for sure. But this just felt different this weekend, like just a total thud.
So I really listened to your opening comments, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying from the standpoint of, you know, it's not as bad or not as good. And I've really put a lot of thought in listening to your opening monologue and trying to put this in proper context. I certainly think it's in the conversation. We'll start there. And there's a strong case for that to be made. But I also, I'm going back to 2008. And the days of Jimmy Barthmeyer and Yoslan Herrera. I go back to 2010 and just those lifeless John Russell-led teams in 08, 09, 10. I mean, the Pirates got outscored by, what, 20 runs
against the White
Sox. As
Donnie put it, though, that 2010 team had Walker, Alvarez, McCutcheon, even Tabata when we thought he would be good. Like, there were some players there that were so young you could say, okay, at least these are the guys that are barely out of AAA that are supposed to be the future. Like, what? Really, where is that on this team? Their highest paid player is a veteran who's not producing. Cruz continues to be mercurial at best. I mean, that's kind of how I would differentiate this from 2010. There was at least some signs of what became the future there.
No. So, I mean, we might be splitting hairs here, but I mean, I would disagree. I think that there's a lot of pieces on this team, which I think, again, drives the angst and the frustration that they should be better. You know, like the pitching, that's something actually to be excited about. So, I mean, that's why I feel that, you know, that 08 team when they were really scraping the bottom of the barrel, even like 06, 07, that's right around the transition because we're talking about the Nutting era specifically.
Yep.
You know, they're dealing from Matt Morris. And so I this is definitely part of the conversation, but I'm going to stop short. And I think of the Will Craig rundown. Is that being quote-unquote the bottom, if that's what we're talking about? You know, that was just a real low point. But yeah, I mean, there's a compelling case to be made considering where the expectation is, where the team sits, the assets that you do have that you're not capitalizing on, tangible progress that should be made that isn't made. I think they're on paces for 98 losses as we sit here today. I'm going to stop short of saying, like, ranking it one up. Can I meet you in the middle? Am I taking the easy way out by putting it
probably
in the top three?
Can you tell me this, because I might have missed this, Dan, and maybe you have an answer. I've looked around and haven't seen anything, and that just might be because I'm dumb and missed something obvious. Did they give a specific reason why they didn't pitch Skeens in this series coming out of the break and held him for this first game of the Tigers series?
No, I think they just wanted to give him a break. I mean, I think they're very mindful of the innings, and the same could be said for Keller. I mean, they're looking ahead as to what everybody is projecting towards, and I think as they reassemble the deck chairs, that's certainly it for Skeens, I would say, and Keller for sure. He's on pace for another career high in innings, so they're just being mindful. They want to increase the workload, but they don't want it to be a crazy hockey stick. And again, they wanted to also, I think, give the guy a bit of a breather.
He's Dan Zangrilli, did an excellent job filling in for Joe Block on play-by-play, and he'll be doing it again at a Cubs-Pirates series near you later on this season. Thank you, Dan.
All right, Malsy, thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.